Welcome back to Introduction to International Relations. This second lecture begins a discussion of how to study international relations. That's not as exciting, maybe, as exploring answers to the puzzles I laid out in the previous lecture, but it's important to do so before we can get back to those puzzles. I do think I've got some good answers, but they won't make much sense until we've gone over the material in these next few lectures. So just bear with me. On the first slide, I lay out the two goals for this lecture. I'm going to spend most of my time here discussing the role of simplified models in scientific inquiry. Then I'll talk a little bit about the different types of models before closing. So, what is scientific inquiry? Well, I offer a definition of science on the second slide. I say a definition because it is not the definition. It's actually fairly difficult to come up with one that everyone would agree on. We in the social sciences tend to see ourselves as engaging in scientific inquiry, even though physicists and many others tend to look down on us, seeing our work as different than real science. And perhaps they're right to. I don't know. I don't really want to get into a debate about pecking orders. All I want to say is that a lot of current research on international relations attempts to be scientific, and so we need to spend some time talking about what that means. For our purposes, as it says on the slide, science is a means of scholarly inquiry that seeks to generate reproducible knowledge about the world through the development of theoretical and empirical models. This isn't very precise, but I think it's uncontroversial, at least in the sense that it describes what physicists do as well as it does the research I'll be presenting in this module. Others might prefer a more precise definition, or somewhat different wording, but there is no field that we'd all agree is scientific that does not consist entirely of theoretical and empirical models. What exactly are models? We'll get to that soon. The reproducibility part, however, is really key. At least, that's the goal. Attempts to replicate published findings often fail, and that's a serious issue. But all the same, a big part of what distinguishes scientific inquiry from other approaches is that, at least in principle, the conclusions we reach are the same that others will arrive at if they follow the same procedures. So, what is a model? It's a simplified representation of the world or some aspect thereof. As it says on the slide, that representation can be physical, conceptual, or mathematical. But different as those forms may be, they're still fundamentally the same. Model airplanes, maps, and the mathematical models of international relations you'll see in this module all serve a similar purpose. They help us understand a complicated reality better by helping us to focus on the parts that matter most while de-emphasizing or outright ignoring everything else. On the next slide, we have a quote from Lewis Carroll, the author of Alice in Wonderland, that I think makes this point well. "What do you consider the largest map that would be really useful?" one character says to another. "About 6 inches to the mile." "Only 6 inches," exclaimed Mein Herr. "We very soon got to 6 yards to the mile. Then we tried 100 yards to the mile. And then came the grandest idea of all. We actually made a map of the country on the scale of a mile to the mile." "Have you used it much?" I inquired. "It has never been spread out yet," said Mein Herr. "The farmers objected. They said it would cover the whole country. So now we use the country itself as its own map, and I assure you it does nearly as well." Although many of us have heard that when you assume, you make an ass out of you and me, ha ha, very clever, although we're trained to think that it's always dangerous to simplify, that the quickest way to earn points with an instructor is to say, "Well, I think it's more complicated than that," it's actually necessary to simplify things if we're going to make any sense of the world. Because a map of a country that is the same size as the country is not a very useful map. The only way to protect yourself fully from the charge of oversimplification is to include every last detail, no matter how extraneous. But really, that way lies madness. A friend of mine recently shared a relevant interaction. He'd been at a conference presenting his research, and someone said something along the lines of, "Okay, I get that models are simplifications, and that's fine, but can you imagine a model airplane with no wings?" And my friend's response was basically, "Sure, it's hard to imagine a situation where I'd do that. I don't know that I'm willing to rule it out entirely, but like I said, hard to imagine. I'll tell you one thing, though. It's also hard to imagine a situation where I'd feel the need to include the windshield wipers." Of course, reasonable people can disagree about whether certain features of the Air National System are more analogous to wings or windshield wipers. But the point I'm building up to here is that when I present simplified models of international relations to you, I don't want you to say, or even think to yourself, "This is nonsense. How can I believe a word this guy says when he thinks the world works like that?" Because I probably don't. Just because I think it can be useful to omit certain details doesn't mean I'm unaware that they exist. The question to ask yourself isn't, "Do I believe these assumptions?" It's, "Are the features he's ignoring more like the wings of an airplane or the windshield wipers?" And even after asking yourself that question, ask it again, because I guarantee you that you're going to mistake a few windshield wipers for wings. I don't mean that to sound condescending. Until you've spent several years developing and analyzing models yourself, it's virtually impossible to avoid making that mistake. There are so many features of reality that seem so important to us until we prove mathematically, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that the things we believe couldn't happen without them can, in fact, happen without them. Turn to the next slide. You see there a picture of a crowded street in London. I want you to locate the young woman in the white blouse and the red skirt. Really, give it a try. Don't scroll ahead yet. I'll wait. So, how long did it take you? 3 or 4 seconds? Longer? It's not too hard to find her, but I bet it took you some effort. Assuming you actually tried, like I asked. Now turn to the next slide, though. How long does it take you to find her now? A fraction of a second? You really can't miss her. She pops out at you. What does that prove? Only that more accuracy is not always better. The first picture is an actual photograph. It is highly realistic. It still distorts and simplifies in very subtle ways. All photographs do. If nothing else, it doesn't capture depth, it's two-dimensional, doesn't do so well with detail either, blah, blah, blah. The second is a digitally altered version of that photograph. It unambiguously distorts reality to a far greater degree. I removed almost all color and blurred everything but the woman in question. Yet I think we can all agree that the second photograph is more helpful if we're trying to find that woman. Similarly, theoretical models that focus sharply on certain details while rendering others in blurry black and white can in fact be more helpful than models which strive to capture reality in all its gritty detail. But, of course, if I ask you to find the young man with the blue rucksack, that would be a different story. If you're curious, he's on the right near the back of the first bus. This brings us to the next point, which is illustrated even more clearly by the following slide. There, you'll see two maps of London. One is the tube map, the other a street map. Here, the difference isn't so much that one is highly realistic while the other is distorted, but that they both distort reality, but in different ways. When I tell you that you shouldn't ask whether you believe the assumptions of a model, I'm not just picking nits. You can't just evaluate the models I'm going to present the same way you would have before listening to this lecture while being somewhat more careful about your wording. The point is that asking whether models or their assumptions are true or not is like asking whether bananas are conservative or not. It's a category error. The question doesn't even make sense. We want to know whether our models are useful, and the answer to that is never simple yes or no, the way it often is when we ask whether things are true or not. Usefulness is not a transcendental, universal, objective quality. It's situational, or, as the slide says, purpose relative. That's a fancy way of saying you have to ask, useful for what? Because it makes a difference. A map of the London Underground is helpful if you're trying to get around on foot. Less so if you're driving. Though, why are you driving in London? Are you a masochist? All maps lie to you. They may tell lies of omission rather than outright lies, but most of them do a little of that as well. Straightening out lines that bend a lot, etc. But no one is bothered by this. Just like no one ever says that black and white photographs can't tell us anything and so should all be rounded up and burned. Or deleted. I mean, do actual photographs even exist anymore? Yet, for some reason, when discussing research that relies upon simplified models of international relations, or elections, or macroeconomics, a lot of people sound awfully damn proud of themselves when they point out that these simplified models simplify things. Well, yeah, they do. Congratulations. Here's a biscuit. Turn to the next slide. Here, I discuss the distinction between causes of effects and effects of causes. When we ask questions about the causes of effects, we have a particular outcome in mind, and we want to know what accounts for it. We might want to know why wars occur, to pick something completely at random that won't come up again later at all. Or why states sometimes fail to cooperate when they'd all benefit from doing so. These are questions about the causes of effects. When we ask questions about effects of causes, we have in mind a particular factor that we think might potentially have some impact on an outcome of interest, and we want to know whether it actually does. For example, we know that there are democracies in the world, as well as non-democracies, and we might ask whether the type of government a country has influences how it behaves internationally. Do democratic countries cooperate more and come into conflict less? Is that just with each other, or overall, or maybe not at all? These are questions about the effects of causes, not the causes of effects. They're also questions that we'll return to later on in the module. As I mentioned on the slide, states do not make decisions. Leaders of states do. But it can be useful, for certain purposes, to assume that states actually exist in a meaningful way and that they have preferences and beliefs and make decisions. But only when asking certain types of questions. If we want to know why there isn't more cooperation or less conflict, we might be willing to pretend states make decisions, and even pretend that they're unconstrained by non-state actors of all stripes, if we think that would be a useful simplification. Spoiler alert, it is. I'll prove to you in subsequent lectures that we can learn a lot about why wars occur and why cooperation doesn't from models that make these very assumptions. But some questions cannot be answered if we make such assumptions. We have to acknowledge that non-state actors exist in order to investigate their impact, or lack thereof. So, for example, we might be interested in asking, do international institutions promote cooperation? Or, do electoral considerations influence whether governments go to war? Yep, we'll discuss both of these later on. Here, we're not asking questions about the causes of effects, but about the effects of causes. And when we do that, we've already made some important decisions about how we're going to simplify reality, what parts we're going to ignore, and which ones we'll need to include. Again, we're not interested in whether assumptions are true or not, but whether they're useful. And that depends on what we're trying to achieve. Let's now move to our final topic for this lecture, the differences between theoretical and empirical models. Theoretical models are best understood as thought experiments. They ask, what if the world looked a certain way? What would that imply? In other words, theoretical models take a set of assumptions and deduce the logical implications of those assumptions. Sometimes that's done rigorously with mathematics, as you'll often see in this module, and sometimes it's not, in which case people will be more willing to read about your theory, but the conclusions you arrive at are much more likely to be specious, which, surprisingly enough, some of us care about enough to overcome our innate fear of mathematics, but I'll beat that horse until it dies and long after in a subsequent lecture. So, if theoretical models are just thought experiments, how can they be important enough to scientific inquiry to be included in my definition of science? Funny you should ask. Not that you actually did, so sorry I could hear you. There are essentially two ways theoretical models can be useful. Some would say more, but that's sufficient for our purposes. One is building foundations. You'll see a few foundational models later on. Those models won't give us answers to either of the puzzles I identified in the previous lecture, but they'll give us something to build on and tell us a lot about what sorts of things can't be part of the solution. Another use for theoretical models is explicating mechanisms. Explicating is just a fancy word for laying out or making clear. So the second point is that theoretical models can lay out or clarify mechanisms that link causal factors to outcomes of interest. I'll explain what makes that so important in a future lecture. For now, let's just say that knowing that a certain pattern exists doesn't necessarily tell us much if we have no idea what's behind it. Theoretical models can't tell us anything about whether certain patterns exist or not. Only empirical models can do that, as we'll discuss in a moment. But they can help us make sense of those patterns, help us figure out which ones are meaningful and which ones are basically illusions. Empirical models require data. By data, I mean information about things that we observed, either in the real world, so to speak, or in a laboratory setting. That information can be expressed numerically, allowing us to analyze it statistically, but it need not be. In other words, empirical models are built on information about things that actually happened in some setting. Theoretical models don't do that, which is part of why I said they're basically thought experiments. However, just because empirical models are based on things that actually happened doesn't mean they're more important, as many of you might be thinking right now. I'm going to try my best to convince you over the course of the next few lectures that data cannot speak for itself. We absolutely need a dialogue moving back and forth between theoretical and empirical models if we're going to learn anything. Neither one can take us very far on its own. There are some limited purposes that each can achieve in isolation, but if we really want to understand international relations, we need a mix of theory and empirics. There are two important things we can do with empirical models. We can use them for measurement and classification, say, for example, statistically differentiating the most democratic countries from the least and sorting out those in the middle, and we can use them to identify patterns of association. We're going to talk a lot more about that in the next required lecture. I'll just close by reiterating that while empirical models can help us figure out whether a pattern exists, that doesn't tell us much by itself for reasons I'll go into next time. As we move forward, with an eye towards our two big puzzles about cooperation and conflict, I'm going to be presenting a bunch of theoretical models and summarizing the results of empirical models that I use to evaluate whether the patterns anticipated by the theoretical models are evident in the historical record or not. Taken together, I hope you'll agree that they help us understand the world better. But I won't claim to account for everything. I'll absolutely be simplifying reality with each and every one of those models, theoretical and empirical. But that's okay, because there's nothing wrong with simplification.